Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast.
Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts, Amelia.
And Beth.
And how are you today, Beth?
I'm a little tired. How are you?
I'm also tired, but I feel like we're tired for two very different reasons. Why are you sleepy?
Oh, I had a long weekend. I drove down to New York to visit with my sister and just got home about an hour ago.
How was it?
It was great. We had a great time.
How was the traffic going to New York?
It was really terrible. But thank
you. I was wondering if it got really bad.
Yeah, it was all sorts of awful. And then I got stuck in the Patriots game traffic coming home.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I'm like limping around between all the walking that we did on the pavement and all the sitting in traffic in my car. My calves hurt and but at the same time, like my hips are all like locked up from being in the car. It's terrible. Why are you tired, Amelia?
I am tired because we just moved, Paul and I, per Tim Regan's prediction, which was really great. I talked to him the other day and let him know how good he did. And our box spring would not fit up the stairs because we have a very old house. So we have been sleeping on a mattress on slates. So the mattress has fallen through all of the slates and it's just like big planks going through my back. But last night we set up our pullout couch. So we're now sleeping on the pullout couch. It's much better. We're going to have a box spring Tuesday though. So things will hopefully be back to normal by then.
Two questions. Is it a queen size bed?
My bed?
Yes.
Yes.
So you can get a split queen box
spring?
That's
coming on Tuesday.
Beautiful. The other option that you have, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but it works. You can actually cut your box spring in half and you bring it up. And so you cut the slats on the bottom of it and you fold it in half so it fits. And then you open it back up and just kind of you sister the bottom of it back together and you have a nice big box.
If only I knew. Unfortunately, we got one coming Tuesday.
Okay. Well, that'll probably be okay too.
For all of our listeners, now you know a trick.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so what else is going on?
Well, I thought this week it would be fun to talk about some random haunted houses, haunted places around the South Shore of Massachusetts. So we came up with a list. Amelia took three of them. I took the other two. So we usually like to alternate. So why don't we have Amelia go first?
Well, two of mine are kind of squished in together because they are right across the street from each other and they're both owned by the same association now. When you kind of suggested this theme, I'm not going to lie. I thought you were talking about just like random houses. And I was like, is there any information on them? I don't know. But these are all historic houses that we're doing today. So it's like historic homes of the South Shore, which is kind of nice. So you can all visit these places. Beth and I both live on the South Shore too. So we're very close to all these places.
Mm-hmm.
So my first house is the Isaac Winslow House. And that's in Marshfield. The Isaac Winslow House was built circa 1699 for the honorary Isaac Winslow at the place named Careswell after the family's home, Kerswell, in Worcestershire, England. This is the third house built.
Do you mean Worcestershire? Like the sauce?
Yeah, sure.
That's where that sauce comes from, Worcestershire sauce.
Okay. This was the third house built on the land granted to Governor Edward Winslow in the 1630s, who erected the first homestead. The Mayflower passenger and major leader in the early years of Plymouth Colony, Edward was three times governor, intermediary with the Native Americans, as well as ambassador from the colony to England. His son, Colonel Josiah Winslow, also held governor's office, the first native-born American to hold it. In addition to leading the colonial militia in the 1675 Great Swamp Fight, the decisive battle of King Philip's War, Judge Isaac Winslow was Josiah's son. He also held many prominent positions in the colony, both military and civil. He was a judge of the probate court in Plymouth, chief justice of the Court of the Common Pleas, and president of the Council of the Province of Massachusetts Bay. His house was inherited by son General John Winslow, who had an outstanding military career as a major general in the British service. He participated in several military campaigns, starting with the War of Jenkins' Ear. What's that? I don't know.
I have no idea. In my Jenkins mind, though, it's a Mike Tyson sort of issue.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Maybe somebody bit somebody else's ear off. He was the biting guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was from 1740 to 1741, and it ended at Lake Champlain in 1756, where he commanded Fort William Henry. After the death of John, the property was passed to his son, Dr. Isaac Winslow. Isaac had a large medical practice serving southeastern Massachusetts and was well known for his work with the smallpox inoculations. He embraced the British cause during the American Revolution and was one of Marshfield's leading loyalists, the house becoming the center for Tory activities. When war broke out, most properties belonging to those loyal to England were seized by the Great and General Court of Massachusetts. It is believed that Isaac was so admired and beloved as a physician by the people, his property was not confiscated. Unlike the Peter Oliver house.
Right, where they grabbed the house and kicked Peter and his family right out.
Yep. Dr. Isaac Winslow was the last of the family to occupy the house. After his death in 1822, the estate was sold to honor debt. It then was put up for auction in 1825, divided and purchased by local families. The house and remaining land were later purchased by neighbor Daniel Webster.
Should we know who Daniel Webster is?
So Daniel Webster, I'm going to talk to him for a little bit now, but he also has a really nice wildlife sanctuary in Marshfield. And I think one of the Marshfield schools is also named after him. But I spent so much time growing up in that wildlife sanctuary, looking at all the birds and stuff. They got some cool owls down there. My mom, huge fan. So lawyer, statesman, senator, secretary of state, and farmer of Marshfield, Daniel Webster, held high respect for the home. He called it Winslow Place and was the first to invest in preserving it. While he himself never lived in the house, he did have a lot of tenant farmers working there. Some guy named Fletcher, and as I was looking, I'm like trying to figure out who Fletcher is, and it like doesn't say anywhere. It just all of a sudden Fletcher shows up. I don't know who he is. Mm-hmm. So Fletcher inherited the house and sold it at auction in 1855 before dying in the Second Battle of Bull Run in 1862. However, after Webster's mansion burned in 1878, his wife Caroline and three children did move into the house, remaining until 1880 when their house was rebuilt. During her residency there, she built the barn that is now used as a meeting room. In 2019, the Patriot Ledger, for those who don't know, the Patriot Ledger, it's the newspaper we all get around here.
It's the afternoon paper. It's like the local sort of like feel good paper. It's not like the Herald or the Globe, which are the morning, like everything's important sort of paper. The Ledger in the afternoon is like a fun local paper.
Yeah, it's well, that's it. It's Wicked Local. And actually, it's funny. I just said that because it's owned by Wicked Local. I didn't even mean to do that. But it's only four around here. It's like the South Shore paper. Mm-hmm. So the Patriot Ledger noted that like many historic homes and buildings, the Winslow House has long been plagued with rumors of spirits, with some saying the home is haunted by the friendly spirit of Penelope Winslow, the mother of the original occupant, Isaac Winslow. According to other local historians, Penelope Winslow probably isn't the ghost, as she's never lived in the Isaac House and died before construction was even finished. Penelope is said to have resided in a different home at the Careswell Estate, even though a large portrait of her does reside in the dining room of the Isaac Winslow House. Various people over the years have said they seen or felt things, and I guess it all depends on what you believe. Kathleen O'Connor, a historic Winslow House Association board member, told the Ledger, "We did have a group of mediums here 5 or 6 years ago who communicated with the dead, essentially. And they agreed that there were people here." Now, the Winslow House isn't the only haunted house in the neighborhood, but there's the Ford House, which is also owned by the Historic Winslow Association, and that sits right across the street. And many think it could actually be even more haunted than the Isaac Winslow House. This is kind of cool. So it used to be on the Plymouth waterfront, and where an extensive covered enclosure is now home to Plymouth Rock, rated America's worst tourist attraction. When the rock... It's bad for those who haven't been.
Is that like an official rating or did you just?
I did see that somewhere. It's not like the worst ever. It's like the worst national park, monument, whatever it is, it did. It's bad. I mean, it's really bad. I took Paul there over the summer for the first time. We've never been.
Definitely disappointing. So disappointing.
It's not even the real rock.
No.
It's just a rock in the ground.
A symbolic rock. It's an actual rock that symbolizes the rock they landed on.
Yeah.
But it's like buried in the ground. And if you grow up in like Eastern Massachusetts, you have to go and visit Plymouth Rock as a school field trip every single year.
Yeah, a lot. You go a lot.
It's a cheap trip because it's free to go look at the rock. So a lot of schools around here will take the kids. But yeah, leave it off your to-do list. If you come to visit Eastern Massachusetts, like, you're not missing much at all. And it's a pain to park down there.
It is. Yeah. But they got some good stuff. They got, what's that place I like called that Kate over at Regina Russell Tea Room, her son owns it. What's it called? Milkshake and Munchies, Munchies and Milkshakes.
Oh, over on Court Street.
Yeah. It's a good place.
Very good. Okay. I haven't been over there, but I'll try it out.
It's good. It's real good. Okay. So where was I? Ford House. Oh yeah. It was on Plymouth Waterfront Plymouth Rock. Okay. Yes. When the rock was moved for construction in 1920, Edward Ford is said to have uprooted and floated his house across Duxbury Bay. Cool. The home is very cool, right?
Yes.
The home is thought to have been built in 1720s. Now, I have seen houses on trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And usually they're like small houses you see on a truck. Mm-hmm. But one time in my hometown over by our high school, I was like in elementary school, they moved a big house and I will never forget it. Cause it's like so surreal seeing a house, like a big house, just like on a truck getting moved. I can't imagine seeing one on a boat floating over.
I actually think it could look a lot more proportional if it were on the boat, because I mean, like a truck, like you think of like those, the units that are on the back of a truck, and mm-hmm. they put hundreds of those on the ships. So I think that once they got the house onto the boat, I bet it would have looked okay. Of course, wait a second. When was this?
This is a long time. This is the
90s. Yeah, never mind.
did they even have motorboats then? Or no. Is it just like a sailboat?
I would imagine they had some guys with oars. I don't think they would have been trying to sail the boat across the bay.
I don't know. I have no idea how this stuff works.
Yeah. No, this to me sounds like a whole bunch of guys with oars.
Well, anyway, whatever they did, they got it over there because it's now in Duxbury. The Ford House was deeded to the Winslow House Association in 1920 and had been home to many association directors ever since then. So from 1990s to the 2000s, Regina Porter, vice president of the historical Winslow House Association and lifelong Marshfield resident, actually lived in the Ford House. And she says that there's lots of noises, bumps, screeches that she heard while she was there. And she's like, it's definitely haunted. Like, it's 300 years old. It's haunted AF. Even growing up, it was kind of a scary house, she said to the Patriot Ledger, who writes a lot about haunted houses in the area. It was kind of labeled. There was an old lady who lived there alone. It needed a paint job. It needed some landscaping. And it was next to this other historic house. So it got a reputation by association. But I do think there are spirits there, and I do think it was a little bit tormented, Porter told the reporters.
Hmm.
Despite a Puritan lifestyle that discouraged belief in the paranormal, colonial homeowners are said to have put coins under doorframes to prevent a witch from coming in and carve Daisy Wheel, a symbol thought to protect homes from spirits above doorways, windows, or fireplaces. At the Winslow House, a daisy wheel can be seen etched in above the main fireplace. So that reminded me of, what was that? What's the other house? You and I went to the talk on it over at the Norwood Library.
Oh, the Fairbanks House in Dedham.
The Fairbanks House. Because they, when they were here talking to me, they said that house has that. Like, they have like rune symbols and all different types of sketches. And same thing. It's like mm-hmm. Puritan America. Like, you're not supposed to do it, but like everyone's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you want to go to the Isaac Winslow House and the Ford House right across the street, you're going to head over to 634 Careswell Street in Marshfield, Massachusetts. And there is a loop trail that begins near the rear of the property, extends parallel to Webster Street to the historic Marcia Thomas House. It continues behind the Thomas house through the woods on the edge of the ridge and returns to the lawn near the Winslow house stables. It's in the middle of the loop in the woods. There is an intersection with a connector trail, Blaze Blue, that leads to the Hoyt Hall Preserve. So if you're really into like historical old houses, like go on a cool nature walk and see a whole bunch. I also found somewhere online that the association that watches over all these places, they make like $45,000 a year. And I read this and I'm like sitting there thinking, I'm like, do I think that's a lot of money or like no money?
Because it depends on what they have to do with it.
Well, that's my point. Like all you have is an old house and like how many people go to old houses in Marshfield? Like you and I have lived, like I lived in Boston for a while, but for the most part, we've lived on the South Shore our entire lives.
I've never been to either of those houses.
I've never been.
Wasn't even aware that they were a thing.
Didn't know. No idea.
So even taking out the visitors, I think that upkeep on homes in Marshfield is actually pretty high and they have to pay property taxes. And
oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I imagine that would probably be enough for one house, but probably not two.
I don't know.
Well, cause they have to heat it and they have to, you know, you get to do like windows and I mean, stuff happens.
Yeah.
You got to mow the yard.
That's the house.
Okay.
So I got it.
You hadn't really come to a decision on $45,000 being.
No, I haven't. I mean like, okay. In the grand scheme of life, like is $45,000 a year, like, you know, I mean, they're selling tickets at like $8 a ticket. But then does that include donations? Like, probably not. My best friend, Mike, who's been on the show, who everyone already knows. I don't know why I have to like give him this title every time I bring him up. He used to work for the Vatican and all these people die and they leave the Vatican like $7 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy to me.
How does one get a job doing that?
Mike's family is very, Mike is not, but his family is very Catholic and his mom had like an inn there or something. I think she might've worked there at some point.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Like, did he go to Rome and work?
No, he worked out over in Boston, over in Braintree. They got a big, you know, when you're driving towards the Braintree split and you look over and there's that big building and a lot of times it has like the Catholic radio has like a billboard near it, 1060 AM, I think it is.
Yes, I can't see which side of the highway has it, but I know where you're talking about that general
that
area.
Is the Archdiocese of Boston.
Oh,
and that is where my friend Mike worked.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. He worked there for like 7 years. Yeah. And his bosses were all nuns and priests.
Interesting.
Right.
Okay. Well, seems like a fairly secure job.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure how to segue from that into the,
So moving on.
Yes, moving on. I want to tell everybody about the haunted park in my backyard growing up. Ooh. And when I say it was in my backyard, I'm only slightly exaggerating. It was actually, if you went down the street in front of my house and took a left and went to the end of that street, so like one city block. Do you think it would have been a city block?
I think it's a little further. But it's close. It's right there.
Yeah.
It's right there. Yeah.
So yeah, right there. C Street. C-S-E-A, like the ocean, not the letter. So C Street Park. To put it in context, like we were talking about the, what did you say it was? The worst tourist attraction in America?
Yeah.
So the pilgrims landed there in 1620. And so in 1622, there was a guy over in England named Thomas Weston, and he had some money and wanted to invest it and do some stuff. So he decided he was going to build a new colony at the mouth of the Four River. Right. And so around Weymouth, we have two rivers. We have the Four River, which goes in front of Weymouth, between Weymouth and Quincy. And we have the Back River, which goes between Weymouth and Hingham. So it's the Four River, F-O-R-E, not the number four. Okay. So he wanted to put a settlement there and trade beaver skins, fish, and timber. So you know where, you know right where this is, right? Over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. My mom did a lot of work on the Four River growing up.
I would think, yes, she would have. Anyway, so this becomes the second oldest settlement in Massachusetts after the Pilgrim settlement down in Plymouth, right? Which I didn't even know until this afternoon slash this evening when I was researching this. I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, I mean, I knew that like King's Cove in Weymouth was a really early area for people, but I didn't realize that we were the second oldest in the state. So it's referred to as Wessagusset, right? That was the Native American name for the land. And the chief of the tribes in the Wessagusset area was this guy, Pecksuet. So in 1623, Miles Standish, who you might know from Pilgrim fame, there's a whole big park named after him down in Plymouth. He ends up stabbing to death Pecksuet in a fight.
Oops.
Yeah, it was Miles Standish and a couple of colonists and Pecksuet with a couple of his Native American friends. And there was some sort of disagreement, I guess, over whose corn who was eating. I couldn't really figure out a straight answer. Like it was all very strange. Anyway, so there was a little fight. It was referred to by some as a massacre. These, I believe it was Pecksuet and three other Native Americans died on that day. And it led to a bunch of violence in the future, and some more people ended up dying in the future. So by 1624, this entire colony that they had set up in Wessagusset had failed due to fighting with the natives. And just on Thomas Weston's end, he didn't do enough planning to start a whole new colony, because even though Weymouth and Plymouth are only like, looking at the map right here, the two colonies, if you went by boat, is really not that far away. That would have been the only way to get there. There's no, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Where are you going with this?
Weymouth and Plymouth are only about 20 miles apart over land, but yeah. there would have been no real way to get from Weymouth to Plymouth in the 1620s.
Yeah, there were no roads.
Right. So everything would have had to go out over the water. All right. Anyway, so fast forward to the 1830s. There are some construction workers working in that general area at what by then was 236 C Street. I believe they were actually building the foundation for the houses that they built down there. They dug up two headless skeletons.
Oh, cool.
Like skeletons that had been beheaded, right? Nice. And so that was just kind of an odd thing that happened. All right. In the 1900s, the very early 1900s, there was construction on nearby Bicknell Road. There were these two Civil War veterans who were digging and doing, you know, new construction for a new home, and they found seven skulls.
That's wild. I had a friend who lived on Bicknell Road. She just moved last year.
Yeah. That whole area. So they found the bodies, like basically down at the bottom of C Street, like at the bottom of the hill. And Bicknell Road is about halfway up the hill to the top, but it's the first street off to the right after the park, if you're coming up the hill. Anyway, so, and I use the term park very loosely because
it's a loose term.
Yeah, it's not what you would think of as a park. I'll get to that. Anyway, so in the 1950s, Walter and Barbara, now Barbara, I found this so interesting, was actually a documented extrasensory perceptionist. She had ESP. I don't know how this was documented. I could not get anything on that, but I was like, ooh, that seems a very interesting tidbit to put in. Anyway, Walter and Barbara Lang by then had bought and they owned this home on Bicknell Road. And they had a daughter whose name was Zory, Z-O-R-Y, which I both love and hate as a name, like all at the same time. Anyway, Zory was about 18 when she started to be regularly visited by this tall Native American man who would just come over and like tuck her into bed, like just like tuck the sheets around her.
Was he a ghost?
Yes, he was 100% a ghost.
Okay.
It would have been exceptionally creepy if a real guy showed up and did that.
That's what I'm saying.
And this went on for quite a while, but it was always just like a very comforting sort of thing that would happen. It was not something to ever get upset about. They ended up, the Langs ended up selling their home, in the mid 90s, to a dentist, who I used to hear him referred to all the time as, oh yeah, Dr. Dorsey's my dentist. And I never met the guy and I'd never heard of him in any other context until I was reading this article this afternoon. And I'm like, I remember everybody talking about him being their dentist when I was like in school and in high school. That's crazy.
And he lived in a haunted house?
Apparently he bought a haunted house. According to his wife, there was an article in like 2007 that I was reading. in the time that they had lived there, so 10 years or so at that point, they had never seen anything out of the ordinary. They hadn't been visited by any spirits or anything. But it was really strange finding out that C Street Park was haunted, and it was like a big deal, right? Because I grew up a block from here, just on the other diagonal of the block, and I never knew that all of this stuff had happened there, and that there were, you know, like ghosts that people had seen over the years in this park. But I did always have a really creepy feeling as you would walk by, because as I said, it's not like a bright park that you would like go in and play in. It was more like an overgrown sort of like scary urban jungle sort of thing, like where you didn't want to go in. There were no paths through it, which was really unusual because we had lots of places like that around North Weymouth growing up, and they all had paths. And they all had places that like the kids would go and hang out, and nobody would ever, ever go into that park or do anything. New neighbors, I remember at one point, bought the house between the park and the water. And right after they moved in, they did like some cleanup on the edge of the park, and they put like some benches and stuff that they could go out and just sit in the yard. But that very quickly like just disappeared. Like they brought the stuff over to a different spot in the yard. So it was a very like creepy area, like to even just walk by. Like we would generally avoid walking by it if we could. It wasn't happy. Anyway, so then in 2001, there was actually a memorial garden was created there. The town went in and they cleaned out a lot of the overgrowth and the brush and everything. And so there's a little dedication plaque, and there's some stones, and there's like a little sitting area. I still, in the 20 years since then, I've never seen anybody in there. I've never heard of anybody going in there. But anyway, the dedication.
Been to this park, right on into the show. Go sending in New England at gmail.com.
The dedication says, symbols of hope that the souls of the first inhabitants of Wessagusset, Massachusetts Indians, and the first settlers of Weymouth, the Western colonists, have reconciled their differences and found peace. Yeah, isn't that sweet?
That is sweet.
So if you want to go see the C Street Park and see what kind of weird, creepy vibes you get when you're there, you just need to go to the intersection of C Street and Willow Ave in North Weymouth. You can't miss it. It's the only really creepy looking park that you'll see from right there.
Nice. Good story, Beth.
Oh, thanks, Amelia.
We should go.
I mean, we can. I like to think that now that I'm a grown up, I won't be as scared of it as I was as a kid. But
there you go.
Even still now, when I drive by it, I'm like, nah, I'm not going to stop. I'm not even going to stop for this stop sign right in front of it that I'm really supposed to stop for. I think I'm just going to keep moving.
Okay. So my next story is pretty short and sweet. It's the Alden House over in Duxbury. Okay, so the John and Priscilla Alden Family Sites is a National Historic Landmark consisting of two separate properties in Duxbury, Massachusetts. Both properties are significant for their association with John Alden, one of the settlers of Plymouth Colony, who came to North America on board the Mayflower and held numerous posts of importance in the colony. John and Priscilla were married in 1621. And were probably the second or third couple among the colonists to get married in Plymouth. Cool. Alden and his relationship with Priscilla Mullins were memorialized in Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, The Courtship of Miles Standish, a fictionalized narrative poem that made the story a piece of American folklore. And I looked it up because I was going to read it on the show, the poem, but it is very long. It's like very, very, very long. But I did read it. It's good. Yeah. So they had these two properties. And so of the two, we're going to talk about the Alden House. And that was originally inhabited in the 17th century by John and Priscilla. They had 10 children in the house, which is kind of cool. They actually had the first children born in America, which is also kind of cool.
There were children born in America before that.
Well, the first English settlers of the Mayflower to have children born in America.
Fair enough.
And so their third of their 10 children was John Alden Jr. And he was accused of witchcraft in Salem when he was 70 years old during 1692. during the mass hysteria of the Salem witch trials. He was accused. He got off. So I looked into this and I was like, oh, I should have this story, but I'm like, this is my new story. So I'm like, I'll just say a little bit about it. So basically he was up in Canada when all these people were getting in trouble for the witch trials. And then he came back down and he was having all these affairs with all these indigenous women and was getting people pregnant and was like, kind of like making bad business deals and upsetting people. So basically they were like, you're a witch, which was really just like, we don't want to deal with you anymore kind of vibes. Is what I got from it. Like, people were just like sick of this guy's like BS. And so they were like, sorry, you're a witch now at 70 years old.
That's the only reason that you can be 70 years old in Salem, Massachusetts in 1692 is because you must be a witch.
But he got off. They let him go. So he was in jail for some like a while and he like broke out of jail and there was like this whole thing. And then I think it was like 2014, they made like a docuseries on it, but like all the historians were like, it was like a movie. I don't know what it was, but they like really embellished this guy and everyone's like, it wasn't really like that, but it was pretty wild from what I read.
We should find it anyway.
I know. So in an article in 2020, the Alden House Historic Site Executive Director Desiree Mobed told the Patriot Ledger that the people of the 17th century were highly superstitious and would have been interesting beliefs and practices at that time period, some of which are still present today. And so they think that like that might have something to do with it. I don't know. Okay.
I was actually still stuck on how well you said her name, title, affiliation, and all of that. Like it just like rolled off and there were like 25 words there.
Yeah. So now this is one of those like annoying haunted things. So, and I wouldn't have put this in because I don't like doing stories where what happens to what I'm about to say, but I'll follow it up at the end. So now there are bits and pieces all over the internet about the hauntings and not a lot of detail. So I read in one place, like this is one article from like 2018 and like, they're just like showing like photos of the house and like one photo, like the caption was the kitchen is haunted by a friendly ghost, but like, that's all it said.
I saw that website too.
Like, what? Like, that's a crazy thing to say. Like, oh, the kitchen is just haunted by a friendly ghost. Okay. So there's like some frequent paranormal activity reported by visitors. It's like occasional child in the window saying, when are they going? And then there's a child crying and there's a woman coming down the stairs and visitors report smelling flowers near the entrance that like comes and goes. It said that Charles Eldon, who gave tours in the 1920s, he haunts it there, as well as some lady named Aunt Polly, who died at 93 years old at 1882. She's still there, but there's like no detail, right? So guess what I did, Beth?
What'd you do, Amelia?
So I looked this place up and It is located at 105 Alden Street in Duxbury, and it's open for guided tours Wednesdays through Saturdays, noon to 4 p.m. in June through mid-October. Other times by appointment only through December 31st. Face coverings are required, but guess what, Beth? It is only $8 for adults and only $5 for kids. And on October 22nd and 23rd, they have ghost tours and I bought me, you, Sean and Paul tickets.
All right, I guess we're going to a ghost
tour. We're going. So now we'll get to like actually find out about the ghosts there.
Excellent.
It's like, it's 2 days, but they have like three tours every day. Mm-hmm. So we are going Friday, October 22nd at 7 p.m.
It's in the calendar.
Great.
All right. So next up, we are staying in Duxbury, Massachusetts, and we are going over to the infamous Sun Tavern. Have you been to the Sun Tavern?
No. We thought we were going to move to Duxbury. We very much so thought we were going to move there. And I kept saying to Paul, I used to go to the conservatory there all the time because when I played the flute growing up, but that's it. And I like babysat a family there for 4 years and that's it. I have not been, I don't know a single thing in Duxbury. I know nothing about Duxbury. It's next to Norwell. That's all I know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've never been there for dinner either. I've driven by.
I didn't even know Duxbury had restaurants. No, I'm serious. Like a lot of towns for people who aren't from this area, like a lot of towns around here have nothing. like Norwell, where I grew up, has nothing. There's like really nothing there. There's more now than when I was a kid.
It's not that there's nothing. It's just, it's a rural area in a suburban area.
Kind of, right? Yeah.
So it's the last of like the old farming towns, but yeah, there's very
few. Duxbury is the same way.
There's very few businesses in a lot of towns around here. And they're interestingly the big money towns.
Yeah.
Right. Like Hingham has some shopping areas. Cohasset has some, but they're primarily just houses.
I always joke about it with my friends from back home that like I married a guy from the other side of the world and he ends up working in my hometown that has nothing in it. It doesn't. That's what we're saying, that there's not a lot in here. Like there's not businesses.
They tend to have very restrictive business licenses. They don't want things like fast food. You know, a lot of the stuff that drives business growth like that tends to be like in Hingham, you can't have any fast food and you can't have drive-thrus.
Well, hold on, because Newton is the same way.
Yep.
And there's a lot of stuff in Newton.
You sure?
Newton, yeah. Newton's huge. And that's a great thing about Newton is that it's the safest city in America and it's just filled with small businesses. I got a burrito there earlier today. That's where my first business was.
Okay. Well, cool. So the Sun Tavern in Duxbury was built as a home in 1741. And the first family that moved in there, as they were living there, their two little girls were up on the second floor. They died of scarlet fever.
Right? That's terrible.
I know. There was immediate tragedy in this home. In this area.
We're talking about that a lot this season because Star Island, those girls died of scarlet fever.
Oh, well, apparently season 5, the season where went places, paid for stuff, and talked about scarlet fever killing kids.
Dang.
All right. So in 1890, the home was bought by a man named Lysander Walker. He lived there for better than 30 years. He had an article published about him in the Boston Herald or the Globe, whatever the paper was at the time, called The Last Hermit of Duxbury.
Cool.
He was a real recluse. He just stayed in his house all the time. He became more and more reclusive and hermit-like. So as...
That's what I'm going to grow up and be.
As time went on, he would obviously need things, but he found ways that he didn't have to go out of the house to get them.
Instacart, DoorDash?
Yeah, well, this was the 19 teens and 20s, so not so much. But instead, there were people in the neighborhood who would come by and try to, you know, like they'd bring him a meal or, you know, something to just try to lift his spirits a little bit. But he was apparently just like a miserable, like chronic depressive who just didn't want to see anybody, didn't want to do anything.
You see, that's what's wrong with the world today, Beth.
What?
Because, like, would you do that for one of your neighbors? Like, do you even know all your neighbors?
I think we've covered this.
I know, but Beth doesn't like her neighbors.
I do know my neighbors. Yeah. There is one neighbor who I would, like, make food for and bring over if she was sick, but she lives in Canada most of the time, so I don't have to. The rest of my neighbors, well, I kind of have mother. Right. But the rest of my neighbors, I have a philosophy of, you know, like good neighbors say hello and that's all they say.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like these people, this guy was a recluse, so they didn't know him and were just like, hey, can I make you some lasagna? And he was like, not nice about it, but like ate their lasagna. I mean,
no, the thing was like he often wouldn't eat the food.
Whoa.
Like, the next manners. People that would come by. No, he was like wicked skinny. He probably had like serious depression, you know, maybe some Crohn's or colitis, or he was probably a sick guy.
Maybe it's schizophrenia.
Maybe. And he just wouldn't go to the doctor. I watched a great Forensic Files, I think, one time about a guy down in Georgia, I'm going to say, maybe it was Tennessee. And he marries his wife like on her 18th birthday. And then nobody in town sees her for the next like 38 years. And the next time somebody sees her, it's the EMTs coming in to like take her body away because she had like a seizure and died. She had epilepsy. And so she stopped taking her medication. She didn't like how it made her feel. And, but she wouldn't go out of the house because she was so anxious about having a seizure in public.
I get that.
And so people thought she died like a couple of decades before. No, she was still alive, just never left the house.
I don't have epilepsy and I could never leave the house and be totally fine. Totally
sure.
If the last year and a half has taught me anything. Yeah.
Nah. Yeah. Even if I don't talk to people when I go out, I still want to like leave the house and like go see other stuff.
I haven't done any of it. I will say though, I took myself out to breakfast by myself the other day and I had a very nice time being alone there because there was no one else at the restaurant but me and the waitresses. And they were like talking about the Gabby Petito case, like over in the kitchen, and I could hear it. So I like felt like I was part of the conversation. It was like listening to a podcast, right?
There you go.
There you go. Those waitresses, Almond Factory over in Pembroke, right near Marshfield and Duxbury.
I haven't been there in probably 20 years.
I hadn't either. And then Paul and I went the other day and I went back by myself. Great.
It was that good.
I recommend the hash browns, black coffee and hash browns.
All right. So we have Lysander Walker, the last hermit of Duxbury, living in the house. He's figured out that people will come over and bring him some food. But if he needs something, right, he's not afraid to ask for it. He just won't go out and like find someone and ask them. So what he does is he like hangs the flag funny on the front of his house. And so the people, as they walk by, like the neighborhood kids or something, will be like, oh, Mr. Walker needs something. And they go over and he tells them what he needs and they go get it and bring it back for him. It's a great system until.
Oh, I agree. I agree. It's a great system. I just, society's changed too much.
Until 1928, when he decides he just can't take it no more, grabs his revolver and shoots himself in his living room.
Yeah, I get that.
But he didn't apparently want to be left there forever. So before he did it, he hung the flag funny so that the people would know to come in and be like, hey, do you need something from the store? Oh, maybe you need, you know, a coroner, right?
Yeah.
So, and also I want to point out that this was in 1928. So it had nothing to do with the stock market crash because that was the following year. So unless he got a visit from, hey, you never know. Unless he got a visit from a psychic, pretty sure it was just depression. Anyway, so in 1930, so Mr. Walker was the last person to own the house as a home. In 1930, it opened at a restaurant as a restaurant, and it's been open as a restaurant for 91 years now. But as soon as it opened as a restaurant, weird stuff started happening. Okay. So there are voices that employees will randomly hear calling their names. Right. You ever gone somewhere and you hear like, who called me? Who's calling me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that, but it only happens to some people who are working there, not to all of them. And I think that a lot of that goes to different people have different psychic abilities. All right. Another weird thing has to do with the soap dispenser in the ladies' room. So apparently the ladies' room is a real hot spot at the Sun Tavern for paranormal activity, not for weirdo pervert activity or anything. But anyway, so
you don't know that. You don't know that.
Hey, this is a family.
You don't know that.
This is a family podcast.
I know, but you don't know that. You don't know what goes on there. You've never been.
All right. So the soap dispenser, it would be filled up and they would come in the next morning and all the soap would be squeezed out and onto the floor. So of course, naturally the first thing they think is clearly we're haunted and they run out and do all these things. No. That's not what they did at all. They said, oh, the soap dispenser must be broken. So they got a new one. Install the new one. They come in the next morning. All the soap is squeezed out onto the floor again. They're like, okay, whoa. Apparently somebody's not happy with what's going on there. And then they proceed to go through this trial and error period where they're leaving the door open. They're leaving the light on. They're leaving the light off with the door open. They're leaving the light on with the door open. And now the door closed. And now they turn the heat on. And each morning they would come in and the soap was still squeezed onto the floor until finally they got the right combination, which is apparently they need to have the light on, the heat on, and the door open. Whoa. And then the ghost will leave the soap in the container and not squeeze it all out on the floor on them. There are ghosts that also like to play with the Duxbury police. Kids, don't play with the police, but the ghost does. The ghost has been known to actually call 911. One of the owners of the restaurant had locked himself into the building for the night. He was doing some paperwork, as you know, restaurant owners do. When all of a sudden the police show up out of nowhere. And they're like, we got a 911 call. We need to come in. He's like, where'd you get a 911 call from? Like the payphone on your second floor. And he's like, it's just me here. And I didn't call you. And they had to do the whole sweep. That's
scary.
Right. On other responses to 911 calls, the police have come in and looked around. Nobody's there. And they walked out of the kitchen. And all of a sudden, all the pots and pans in the kitchen started banging together.
Wow.
I guess they hang on the ceiling. And it was like somebody had gone by and like swished their hand along them to make them all rattle, rattle. Right. And of course, they run back in, guns drawn. Nobody's there.
Nobody's there.
Same things that they'll hear footsteps going along. Nobody there, just footsteps. And it's like, it almost seems like the footsteps are just taunting them too. Like, haha, you can't see me, doing sort of footsteps, like just out of sight. In the 1960s, there was a guy that owned the building. His name was, I believe, David Wells. And he reported that every night as he would go along, he'd have to blow out all the candles because this is the 60s. And we used to, for those of you that don't know, we used to put actual live flames in the middle of tables when people were eating, not these LED lights that are much, much safer these days. Anyway, so he would blow all the candles out and then he would go out the door. And just as he would be closing the door, he would look across and there'd be a single candle relit. He said it happened every night and he had to go back over and blow out that last candle again. But every night it happened. Like it was never the same candle either. It would be like one on the left side of the room. Just somebody come along and just, nope, this one, got to come do this one. Guests also are frequented by the spirits there. All right. There's, you know, they hear the footsteps, the cold spots that people will feel. There's a woman's voice that will just come along and say hello, yell hello through empty hallways in the restaurant after hours. Crazy stuff. But the last thing that I wanted to talk about was there was an experience that the current owners had. The chef. That's what I'm looking for. That's the word. The chef was out back doing his cooking deal and he hears the bartender yelling that there's someone choking. So he runs out to the bar to try to help the person who's choking. And the guy like just sort of, how do I describe this? He like leans forward and he coughs out whatever he was choking on right out on the bar. And he turns to the owner, the chef, and he's like, oh, thanks for, you know, hitting me on the back. And the owner was like, I didn't do anything. And so he turns to the woman next to him and he's like, thanks for hitting me on the, and she's like, I didn't do anything. And no one around him touched him. So the ghost came by and like thumped him on the back to dislodge whatever he was choking on and just kept on moving. Like,
that's wild.
That is why I am absolutely like craziness. So anyway, I think that I might go and eat at the Sun Tavern.
You should take me. They got an all right menu here. They got a house-made black bean burger that comes with cauliflower tots. You know how I like making anything out of cauliflower.
Yep. Oh, you checked out their whole menu? Oh, well, maybe we'll go
right now.
Maybe we'll go on the Friday after the Alden House.
Oh, yeah. Good idea, Beth.
Yeah, we should see if we can get reservations. So it'd have to be reservations for like 8:30?
I guess.
Anyway, so yeah, that's the Sun Tavern, Duxbury, Massachusetts. Yeah, they're supposedly the food there is really good. They have one of those small menus. And you know when the menu is really small that it's all really good. What?
It's not that small. Their online menu looks pretty extensive, but very fancy. Their portions are small. That's how you can tell a place is nice. And they're at 500 Congress Street at Duxbury, Mass. They're open Tuesday through Saturday, 5 to 9:30 p.m. and Sundays 9 to 4. Closed on Mondays.
I think it's nice when restaurants are closed on a day to give everybody a day off. Unless I really want to eat at that restaurant that day, and then why are you closed? So those are our stories.
Yeah, good stories.
What else do we have for people this week?
We learned a lot.
We did.
We have some stuff. Okay, so we need to apologize to Marissa, who we actually like half apologized her because we did shout her out for her artwork last week, which was really cool. But before she had told us about her artwork, she had also been like, hey, like, I noticed you guys never read my 5-star review. Like, did I do something? No. And this is a PSA to everyone. We are not getting all of our Facebook reviews. So if you left us a 5-star on Facebook and we haven't said anything, we don't see it. So she screenshot it and sent it to me. And it says, love the show. I'm very much into studying the unknown and live in New England myself. Listening to Amelia and Beth reminds me of conversations I have with my mother about spiritual topics. Thank you so much. That was really nice.
Thanks, Marissa.
That was awesome.
Or is it Miss Mari? Miss Mari Mar underscore?
Yeah. Okay. So that was really cool and awesome. And thank you very much.
You know, I wonder if... So sometimes, you know how the Facebook settings can be weird, that like you have stuff set that you can't see stuff if you're not somebody's friend.
Yeah.
So that might be an issue if
that's
people
what's
have
going
their...
on. Yes.
Okay. So if you're somebody who's left us a review and you have your privacy locked down, I mean, good for you. I'm all in favor of keep your Facebook private if you want it private, but that might be why we haven't read your review. Take a screenshot of it and
send it in.
Yeah. Put it in the messages.
Let us know. We want to know. Yeah. And it's the obvious only explanation for why we haven't gotten more Facebook reviews in the last year. So, okay. Up next, we have a review on Apple Podcasts from Cassie G. 029. Love it. This podcast makes my work days go by faster. I find Beth and Amelia's voices very calming. And I love how they read all the drive-by ghosting stories. I just found this podcast a few weeks ago. I binged every episode and now I am all caught up. I would definitely recommend this podcast to anyone and everyone. Well, thank you so much, Cassie. That was very encouraging.
Thanks, Cassie. That was a wonderfully detailed review. And I'm so glad to hear that you got all caught up with us in a matter of weeks. What was your favorite episode?
Was it last week's episode where we read all of your stories?
Perhaps. Maybe it was an earlier one. Ooh. Maybe she really likes haunted lighthouses of Maine.
Maybe. We have another thing we need to shout out. This comes to us from Penny Reynolds. And she had messaged us to be like, could you add me to your listener appreciation week? But she came in after we started recording.
Then the answer is no, definitely not.
And she said, she is Rockville Red, otherwise known as Penny Boyce. Beth wondered about where I am from. Rockville, Minnesota? MD is Minnesota or Maryland?
Maryland.
Rockville, Maryland.
Some Rockville crabs.
Rockville, Rockaville High School. You think they did that when they were kids? Instead of Rock and
I thought
Roll
it
High
was
School?
Rockaway High School from Rockaway, New York.
No, it's Rock and Roll High School. Like the movie with the Ramones.
Okay.
Anyway, her podcast is Outrageous Politics. Obviously not paranormal. It's about outrageous things politicians do to each other and us to stay in office. I cover stories from the beginning of our country to the present day. Nonpartisan. Lots of history. Cool.
Very cool. I will check that one out.
Check that out. Yeah. Okay. Then who else do we have here? I don't know if there was anything else. It has been suggested to us that we should investigate the Abigail Adams house, and someone gave us an in to do it. Would people be interested in us doing that? I think I'd be interested in it. I reached out to some people in the area to be like, hey, have you guys ever investigated this place? And they were all like, no, I don't think it's haunted. And I'm like, well, you don't know unless you go.
Okay.
My mom's named after her. Did you know that?
I did, actually.
Now you know it again.
Okay.
I feel like we got something else that I'm forgetting. And I'm so sorry to whoever I'm forgetting. Rock and roll high school. Someone sent a funny thing. Like, you know, when people take a photo of like a tweet someone sent?
Yep.
So Jessica sent us this and it says, the closest you can get to knowing what it's like to be a ghost is listening to a podcast where the hosts are trying to remember a piece of trivia that you know. Indeed. That's funny. That's a funny joke. Hey, Beth, did you know that yesterday I saw a rainbow?
I did know because you sent me a picture of it.
Yeah, because I always send pictures of rainbows because I really like rainbows. Because my dad calls me the rainbow queen because he says I see more rainbows than anyone else.
You're always looking for them.
I love them. I love a good rainbow. So, I mean, and we all love good rainbows, right? But what about a bad rainbow, Beth? Where do bad rainbows go?
I have no idea.
Prism. And they get a light sentence.
Please send an email to ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com with all your appreciation for Amelia's rainbow joke.
I love that joke. I love it almost as much as my my cabbage joke, coleslaw. Very funny. So Beth, we got anything else?
No.
I have one like minor thing. It's not a big thing. So my last night that Paul and I were sleeping at our old apartment, he saw a spirit, and apparently my cat did too. And Paul, he like believes in this stuff, but like not like me. And he keeps calling it like, he's like, we were visited by the netherworld. That's what he keeps saying.
The netherworld?
That's what he keeps calling it. Yeah.
That must be a Russian thing.
It's just a Paul thing. And anyway, Paul always jokes that if he were to have a podcast, he would call it the Introverts Podcast, where it would just be him being like, hello, everyone. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that wrong? And that's what he said his podcast would be. But I'm very much trying to get him to record and tell us and the listeners about his experience seeing the spirit from the netherworld playing with my cat. Because it's a spooky story. It's not scary, but it's like spooky. And I'm like, why wouldn't you wake me up for that? And he was like, when you get visited by the netherworld, you just go somewhere else. But I hope he tells the world about it.
Oh, did he tell you about it?
Yeah, he did. But I don't want to tell people what happened because I want him to, because he's better at telling it.
He's not going to.
He will. I'll give him some of that vodka you gave us.
Is that good vodka?
Yeah, it's great.
You can reach us on social media. We are on the Facebook, Ghost Hunting in New England. We are on the Instagram, Ghost Hunting in New England. We are on the Twitter, Ghost Hunting NE. We have a website, ghosthuntinginnewengland.com. Anything else? We're always looking for your drive-by ghostings. Give us a 5-star review.
5-star.
Remember, tell your kids not to destroy stuff at school and put videos on the stupid TikTok. That's not cool. That's taxpayer money.
Is that really happening?
Yes. Yes, it is really happening. We just got a message from Bobby's new school principal that, yeah, they're having trouble with it. This is junior high school. So apparently the high school here in town is like a huge mess because of it.
Dang.
Like it's
cut it out, you little delinquents.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Be respectful of people's stuff.
I just remembered what I forgot. We got a review on Audible, but I will leave it for next week.
Okay.
That's it. And as always,
happy hunting.